Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, one of my concerns is we're going to start seeing a January 6th type event every day as these school board meetings continue to happen. Because look, this angry crowd, you're never going to appease them enough. Never. It's not going to happen. They're not going to be happy until everyone's kid has had it and everyone's sick, because that's their worldview. I actually have someone who believes, just like the mumps and the measles when we were kids, everybody got it and everybody lived. Well, not everybody, but most people. This isn't the same. Please stop with the dime store epidemiology. You didn't get your degree from the Cracker Jack box. They don't do that anymore. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, are we going to see a January 6th every day thanks to these knuckleheads? And should we be looking into the actual January 6th as a way maybe to stave off what I fear is coming? And here to share some thoughts on all of that, I've asked our good friend Jeff Hauser to come talk with us. Jeff is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure.
So my premise is, my thought is, as I'm watching these videos from school board meetings across the country, is there's a well-organized, well-coordinated effort, well-funded effort to enrage these people and shoot them into school board meetings solely to take down, one, to take down our school boards, but also to create chaos and havoc.
Yeah, there are a few things going on. One is that January 6th as a topic of widespread, where there would be widespread disgust at the violence and behavior on January 6th, that has entirely receded from most coverage. Most people are not made to confront the enormity of the transgression of our democracy that occurred on that day, and the violence of it and the sheer terror that were experienced by people who were literally in the Capitol building of the United States government. So that's one thing that's happened. It's receded. The second is, we have social media that are not run by specific editors, but there is an editorial philosophy, and that is embedded in what are called algorithms. And an algorithm is just a fancy way for about decisions. And so basically you set up, human beings set up algorithms. They tell the algorithm to favor some types of content based on some reason and to fuel people on it and like figure out what type of person might like something and give it to them. And what that does in the area of politics is tend to give people more extreme versions of what they heard before. And conspiratorial talk is really good at getting engagement, because once you start buying in to conspiracies, you're susceptible to accepting the next. So you have an entire population of people who exist in this ecosystem, which is disproportionately on the right. If you look at the most heavily engaged posts on Facebook every day, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 come from crazy right-wing figures who would have had no traction in our media system 25 to 30 years ago. Those people consume that, and they are ready. They are like the latent shock troops of the right wing. And then you have the organized people, the cynics, the more people with institutional power who want to use that anger to further their anti-government, anti-equality, anti-fairness, pro-kleptocracy inclinations. And that includes attacking public schools. I mean, there's no institution that has been more consistently the target of right-wing derision than America's public schools. They hate the teachers' unions. They hate the idea. I mean, they believe in homeschooling. They believe in private schools. They certainly oppose integration. I mean, so much of the modern right-wing movement is still a reaction to Brown v. Board of Education and the desegregation of America's schools or the end of school prayer. Like, these are key cultural touchstones. And algorithms create ever angrier people. And the right-wing elites use those shock troops to threaten the legitimacy of institutions like public schools in this country. And it's extremely dangerous.
No, it is. And you look at the rhetoric that's come out. Just today, I was looking at a handful of videos. One from Encinitas, California, where the guy's calling for civil war. He's got the addresses of all of the school board members. We're coming to your house and we're going to get our guns in civil war. You look at a guy from Northampton County, Pennsylvania, just a couple hours from where I sit, who's talking about getting 20 guys to go into a school meeting, board meeting, and throwing them out and reinstalling people that, you know, they want, and then voting the other way. And I'm going, this is not how democracy works, but this is how fascist rule does work. And these are the people that they're going to use and the ideas that they want to be able to move us forward, just like they wanted to do on January 6th.
Yeah, it's terrorism in the sense that it's politically oriented fear creation. I mean, people forget that the night before January 6th, the night of January 5th, there were bombs placed outside the Democratic National Committee building. I believe actually the RNC as well, because remember, they think there's an establishment Republican Party that is selling out the true Trump wing of the Republican Party. But that's still not even been solved, which is just a complete failure for the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. But there is terror. We all remember that there were death threats and bombs mailed to Soros and a bunch of other figures before the 2018 midterm elections. There was a bombing of a synagogue before the 2018 election. Right-wing terror in this country is a key fact that alters how people behave. There are going to be school board members who are not going to do what they think is right because they just don't want to deal with the possibility that one person's rhetoric is going to be reality. And they'd be crazy to assume it's impossible. It's certainly possible. We've been seeing real violence in this country, and that's worrisome. And as you said, in terms of fascism, I mean, the more times people bend their will to, and terror succeeds, that only emboldens the terrorists. And right now, the lack of real repercussions for any of the senior figures who instigated January 6th has to be emboldening people on the right.
No, I've been saying all along, every one of the people who have been sentenced thus far has gotten a slap on the wrist, in my view. They should have been, the sentences should have been, you know, multiple times more than what they got, to send a message for the future people who want another January 6th, who want that to happen every time something they disagree with happens. And I've said for a long time, all of these little exercises are just tests. They're little tests to see how far they can push and how our system will react. And sadly, we're not reacting. We haven't gotten to the bottom of January 6th, and I don't see Merrick Garland from the outside looking in. It doesn't appear to me that he's moving as quickly as I think we should be moving, and our political class isn't moving quickly either. We should have been knee-deep into this already.
Yeah, I think Garland is of the view that we can de-escalate things by papering over differences and hoping that the anger that was exhibited on January 6th will dissipate over time. And the reality is that due to those algorithms I was discussing before, the anger is only deepening. It is not going away. The people who are building out that anger, they are feeling emboldened by the lack of action on January 6th, and the situation is gonna get worse. I think Garland and Wray, the FBI director that Donald Trump installed when he fired James Comey, we still have the same FBI director as Donald Trump installed. And for some reason, Joe Biden and Merrick Garland have decided that that is a wise course of action, which I disagree with. But between Garland and Wray, we have two senior figures who are trying to de-escalate passions surrounding January 6th. They're letting the court cases play out in as quiet a manner as possible. They're not having high profile, here's the state of the investigation. Here's the big picture of our understanding about how this came to be, which you could talk about without biasing or prejudicing any of the individual specific legal cases. But it's the big picture dynamics about January 6th, which I think have been lost from the conversation. I think that reflects a decision by Wray and Garland. It isn't like some cynical strategic desire to then rebuild it up in an election year. It's to just dampen the passions. People were appalled in January and February of this year. And the reaction, basically 60-70% of this country who are not stuck in those algorithmic hellholes are not paying attention to January 3rd. And it's the type of people who think, January 6th, and it's the people who think that those were martyrs. Those are the people who are thinking about it the most. And so what's going to happen is that the majority of society is going to forget And the angry minority is going to get ever more aggrieved. And that imbalance does not lead to a good place.
No, you're absolutely right. And the rhetoric, and I don't know if you've noticed this as I have, the rhetoric is heating up. The threats are getting more frequent and more out, just completely, you know, we're going to start a civil war. We're going to go in and we're going to throw you out and we're going to install other. I mean, anti-democratic rhetoric from its core, and it's being met with a collective meh.
I mean, the stakes, if you listen to somebody like Tucker Carlson, are enormous. He both sometimes explicitly and often implicitly embraces replacement theory, which is the view that essentially Jews are bringing minorities into the country to reduce white control of the United States. And this is one of the animating principles of Charlottesville, of the right-wing zealots there. And if you think that American society, as you conceive of it, is under attack, that critical race theory is going to brainwash your kid, if your kid is white, into like hating white people or something. If you actually like take those crazy ideas seriously, and you think freedom is that a mask mandate in a school is an act of fascism itself, if you think it's fascist, then it becomes an act of liberation and resistance to perpetrate violence. And like, yeah, I mean, it's inevitably we're going to see more violence, not less. And I think you just really have to scare people out of this sort of craziness, and you have to make the cynical people who are managing it on the high end really feel some negative consequences for their actions.
And that again comes back down to someone like Merrick Garland, who, to be honest, I'm sorry, and I know people go, trust me, Rick, it's coming. They're going to go after Trump. They're going to hold Trump accountable. They're going to get all the people who are involved. It's going to take time. And I'm going, no, we don't have that kind of time. We don't have the wheels of justice grinding slowly kind of time, because the rhetoric keeps ramping up because no one sees that anyone's being held accountable. And look, it's my opinion, and you can disagree with me if you'd like, that we're never going to hold Trump accountable. We didn't hold Reagan accountable. We didn't hold H.W. Bush accountable. We didn't hold George W. Bush accountable for all his lies that got us into the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. What makes me think that we're going to hold Trump accountable? Especially someone with like Garland.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic right now. The Manhattan work seems to be moving at a very cautious way. And, you know, honestly, the Manhattan DA does not necessarily have the most slam dunk case out there. I think the Mueller investigation is kind of a bit of an original sin. They foreclosed the breadth of their own investigation, I think somewhat understandably, insofar as I think they were subject to being fired at like a moment's notice because Bill Clinton let the independent counsel law lapse. Mueller basically just served at the pleasure of the attorney general. That attorney general was Bill Barr. So I understand to some extent why he did not run a complete investigation and only track down some stuff. I think he thought, if I make the case of obstruction of justice clear enough, I don't need to go in after everything. This is such a slam dunk. It'll take care of itself. And obviously, Bill Barr managed to disappoint Robert Mueller, which shows you kind of what a naive fool. I mean, like a patriot and a commendable person on any number of different levels, Robert Mueller was. But ultimately speaking, at the biggest moment in his career, he was foolish and he got played by Bill Barr. And I think Merrick Garland is very much a figure like Bob Mueller. He's somebody who is a member of the establishment and has a difficult time picturing the modern Republican Party for what it is and how it does not reflect the genial people, you know, whose homes he visits on the cocktail party circuit.
Yeah, and they're definitely not good people on both sides. But now I'm seeing that the January 6th investigation is going after phone records and possibly some of the members of Congress. And I'm like, how can you not, especially now that we know Jim Jordan had not one, but two, maybe even more conversations with Donald Trump that day. We now know that there are others who, you know, Matt Gaetz supposedly had a conversation with Trump on that day. I think we have to know who was talking to the president, what was being said, and what was being coordinated.
Yeah, we have to both. There are two things we have to do. We have to find out as many facts are possible, and we have to find out those facts and convey them in a way that forces the media to engage with it seriously and not get distracted. And the way you need clash, you will need dramatic moments. It's not just a matter of assembling the facts. Like the free market of ideas does not, whether or not it ever worked like optimally, which I think, I'm skeptical of, it is not working right now. One of the great skills that Mitch McConnell has, which is super simple in theory, even if maybe at times more difficult to execute, which is that if a topic is unpopular, it's not that he tells his people to vote the popular way. It's just don't engage with them. Change the topic. So whenever we're going to talk about Trump in January 6th, they'll try to talk about critical race theory or Afghan rebels coming up through the Mexico border to give us super COVID or something. Like, I mean, they're going to come up with crazy stuff. And it's our job to try to make the truth not only true, but as dramatic as possible, to find targets who will fight back so that there's clash, that there's dispute, and there's some interesting television and social media content to share. Like, we need this to not only be true, but we need it to be vivid so that people can remember how scary January 6th really was.
Which is why I was against Nancy Pelosi throwing not allowing Jim Jordan on the Republican side. I wanted Jordan on that dais so that Liz Cheney could point to him and go, "You were there. Why did you do this?" And he's already there. I don't ever see him being subpoenaed and sitting in the chair. For me, that was a way to get him there and do just what you said.
Yeah, I don't think the current generation of Democratic leaders is uncomfortable with the messy types of politics which are needed. In an era where there were three network news channels and what they decided people should know was the main basis of common information in this country, a certain gentility worked as a political strategy. But now we are fighting desperately for attention. And Democrats are not comfortable forcing attention on the issues that they want to elevate.
I'm right there with you. Jeff, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Always good talking with you. Thanks so much, brother.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Jeff Hauser, Executive Director of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Make sure you check out their website, revolvingdoorproject.org. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.